don't matter if you ain't left or right, if you bleed red or blue. You better listen up, friends, cause we got a show for you. So come on, come on, come on, it's time for Cover Talks. This ain't no matter if I'm right.
Hey, good morning, everyone. We're a little late this morning. The studio was being used for some more imperative stuff than more time sensitive, not more imperative. I've got a pretty imperative guest on, and I'm pretty excited about it. It's Wednesday, February 27th. Welcome to the Web Only Wednesdays edition of Cody Talks. Coming to you live here from South Central Kansas, Hutchinson, Kansas, where we've had more snow in the last 6 days than we have in the last 3 years, probably. Don't quote that statistic. I'm making it up, but it's been pretty crazy around here. Things are starting to settle down and melt out, and I have a really, really cool guest today that I'm excited about, Dr. Bart Rossi. Dr. Rossi, are you there?
I'm here. Nice to be with you.
You have, I think the title of the show is probably going to garner some attention from folks. I titled the show, What Turns Men Into Killers. Tell me a little bit about why you're the guy to have on a show where we're talking about the psychology behind someone becoming a killer or a murderer.
Well, actually, I'm a political psychologist, and I do like to look at the personality traits and characteristics of usually politicians and leaders, and elections are certainly interesting to me, and who presents well. But also, I'm a guy who's interested in personality theory and the personality characteristics that make people do what they do. In this case, you know, we're talking about people who end up being killers or profiling these killers, if you will. So I'm kind of into this stuff, some personality theory, and that's why we're talking, I guess.
And I don't really know how to prompt the conversation. I know that the packet and the information that we got about you kind of led into a little bit of this is a Oscar Pistorius and what is allegedly happened there. What, you know, when you go to look at that from the psychological standpoint of it, any of these situations, how do you even start to assess what caused this change in this person's mind, or brought out this change in this person's mind to do this horrendous thing?
Well, first off, I think it's important to note, and I think a lot of people kind of miss this sometimes, is that we all have different sides to our personality. And I think a lot of folks think that, you know, people are kind of one-dimensional, unidimensional, where they see someone on TV or they meet someone and they think, oh, this individual's got a great personality, they're outgoing, they're wonderful, oh, they've got these traits, you know, she looks great, that's how she presents herself, he's really good, this is a good one, I like this kind of a personality type. But that's not really the whole situation. All of us have certain sides to our personality that are not as good as other sides. We all have different features as part of our personality that are kind of odd or different and need assessment. We all need work on our own personality traits sometimes. And I think that what's going to happen with this Oscar Pistorius is that we're going to find out he's not quite the person that we might have thought him to be. I think you're going to find that there's going to be individuals who say that, you know, there's been some dark sides to his personality profile. There's certain features to him that, you know, you don't see readily in the public domain. For example, perhaps he felt somewhat insecure since he did not have legs. Maybe for a long time he's been harboring feelings about himself, being a man, being a person, certain insecurities, certain conflicts that he's had to deal with in his life that were there. And, you know, when the situation comes up, whether he's got an argument with his girlfriend or whether there's something else going on, he kind of goes to those other sides of his personality. And not to mention the fact that, of course, his fame and, you know, almost instant fame because of the Olympics changed some of his thinking. It might have made him less sensitive to some of those dark sides of his personality.
Let me ask you this, just strictly because this popped into my head. And obviously he has some emphasized or exaggerated issues with you know, with his handicap that he's and the fame and all those things that you just mentioned. Do all of us though have a little bit of that dark side? I mean, you know, you talked about that people are not one dimensional, not unidimensional. I mean, that's something that's always intrigued me is you know, you have this person that's whatever, a grandmother type, like this is the nicest person in the world. That kind of extreme example. Does everyone have a little bit of that dark side that just folks are better at controlling it than others? Circumstances dictate that as well. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you framed that up pretty well. I think we all have sides to our personality that we need to keep in check. All of us are far from perfect. I think we all know that. And except the politicians, they're all perfect.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
But we all have certain sides that need to be adjusted. We need to improve on certain skill sets, certain personality features that we have. I mean, who's more outgoing? Who's too aggressive? How do you be assertive but yet not be blatantly obnoxious? How do you present yourself? It's always a constant learning experience. And your point, I think that, yes, there are certain sides to all of us that we need to govern, to modify. And that's part of life. And I think sometimes we do think of an individual or certain stars in particular as such a unidimensional, great personality. And yet there are many other aspects to that person.
I think to some extent that thinking of them as a you know, one dimensional person is why we're so shocked and intrigued when things go wrong in famous people's lives.
Yes, I think that's true, and we also put some of ourselves into that thinking where we relate to that person. Oh, that person's got a great personality. You know, I should take some of those traits and put them into my being as well. And if I could be more like that, you know. And then when we're disappointed, the psychology of it all is such that we're really down in the dumps and we're really conflicted over what's going on.
And so from that perspective, I mean, you talk about all of these possibilities that, you know, where Pistorius is obviously the example that's on top of everyone's minds right now, but the same kind of thing applies to these active shooter, school shooter type situations that we've had. Is there a prevention model? My question is, what can we do to prevent it? I don't think that's really realistic. I'm a firm believer that our goal needs to be to lessen the occurrences, as opposed to a perfect scenario of it never happening again. But, what's your thoughts on that?
I think you put that one really well. We're not going to get perfect out of this. You're right. If we can minimize these types of situations, that would be my goal as well. But I think first and foremost, we ought to take a look at these shooters. And they all seem to have a similar profile, a very similar profile. They have anger, and psychologists talk about retained anger, and that retained anger generating into a rage over time. And that rage then moves forward where they have what we call an explosive personality. And believe it or not, all these shooters feel that they're the victims. Believe it or not, they feel they're the victims. Society, the world, or in the Connecticut case, a mother did not treat them well. And that they're angry and they want to strike back. And then, of course, you see the striking back in one way or another. And usually when that happens, they feel it's the end of the day for themselves, and there's either a suicide or a shootout of some sort. So it's a similar type of profile with all of these people. And it is not something that just happens because someone slips out, quote unquote, or has a bad couple of days or a bad month. This is a situation that has developed over time. It's a personality disturbance over years usually. And in most of these cases, you can see that these individuals have had a history of multi-dimensional problems, so, many personality issues.
So is the solution a treatment solution, or is it a recognition solution? And let me follow that up to let you know it's a baited question. That I think the biggest issue is a recognition, or maybe it's a denial solution of my child or my boyfriend or my girlfriend or whatever is just stressed. I don't think that the Connecticut shooter's mom knew that he was in that much disarray. Does that make sense? Is there a recognition issue out there or a denial issue out there with people that are family, loved ones, caretakers of these folks?
Well, I think I like the word denial. I think like with the Connecticut shooter, I mean, the mother here seems to be somewhat of an odd person herself. I mean, she seems, we don't know all the facts yet, but she seems to have had some odd thinking of her own. But I do feel that she had a sense of this for a long time. I think that was probably in denial. Maybe she had resistance to bringing her son to treatment earlier. Probably felt that she could get past it with him and maybe work on this kid herself. And usually that doesn't work well, as you see. So I think that it's a recognition standpoint. That word is important, too. We really need to recognize when kids especially are feeling that they're on the outside looking in. They're not part of their peer group. They're not part of what's going on. They feel ostracized. Maybe they're bullied. Maybe they're made fun of. In this day and age, it's not hard to do. So they feel that they're really agitated, frustrated with everybody else. They become more angry, and then, of course, the angry and retained anger features generate into this overwhelming rage. So yeah, I think that if we recognized this early, we brought people for assistance, it would make a significant difference. And the prioritizing of mental health, that's what I'd like to go to, prioritizing mental health so that kids and young adults can get help earlier, that would have a profound impact on this overall situation.
Let me throw another curveball at you that really is it's maybe a little bit off, but it's something that's on my mind a lot, and it's a topic that I've discussed on air and at speaking engagements. I kind of call it the wussification of America. And I don't want anyone to take that as I think we should all be macho Rambo-type people. It's not what I mean. But I think that we've gotten to this point where we have kids that are acting not typical, okay, and it doesn't. They're doing things that are abnormal, and it seems like we see it over and over again, and we're scared to try and mold that kid. And I don't want to mold them into normal. I love the diversity and the culture and the crazy mixed up patchwork that America is. I think it's why it's the greatest country in the world. And everyone has the right to be themselves, but we've taken this be yourself thing, be proud of who you are so far that we have these kids, that have some psychological issues and are acting out on it. And I think we have people that almost encourage it, and either encourage it or are afraid to confront it because they don't want to be trying to fit this. They don't want to seem like they're trying to fit this kid into a box. Does any of that make sense to you?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And I think that your point is a good one too on the fact that we have this diversity in this country and we have people who really should aspire to become the person that they want to be. But that's going to be different for different folks. And obviously, that is not going to happen when you have these cases like with these shooters where they become ostracized. They don't feel like they're part of anything. They resent the fact that they've been turned and that they feel that everybody's working against them and that they're belittled, demeaned, and marginalized. Those folks don't go down that pathway that you're talking about where it comes to, becoming self-actualized at all. They, to the contrary, they become hostile and very dangerous people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, it comes across as me thinking that every kid should have a short haircut and wear blue jeans, and that's not what I'm talking about at all. But when a kid starts to make that move where you see a drastic shift in attire, in attitude, in communication. I think there's too many people just kind of saying, kids will be kids, as opposed to realizing, admitting, and maybe getting out of that denial stage that something's going on in that kid's mind that someone needs to confront and help them deal with.
I think that's a very important point, because, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy today and things that psychologists can do can be helpful. If the kid got some help, it could make a real difference. And I always use the point that it just seems odd in our society that most professional psychologists, most professional golfers have their own personal psychologist because of peak performance. You know, and other professionals have their own psychologist. But when it comes to taking our kids to a psychologist to get help because of what you just said, there's this stigma attached to it. So we're going backwards in many ways. We're not going in the right direction when it comes to this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've got one. It's not all the time that I have a psychologist on the line, so I'm just going to abuse your knowledge base and ask you one more question that's on my mind. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship to medicines, drugs. I want your thoughts. Don't get me wrong, I'm a complete layman. I have zero clinical expertise in anything, honestly, really. But I don't know what I'm talking about here. But from the outside looking in, it seems like some of the, and I don't even know the proper terminology, but some of the mind-altering drugs that we use as treatment, is there a demon there? Do they become too reliant on them? Are there some of them that the side effects worsen the situation? I don't even know how to ask the question. I just want your thoughts on the state of drugs being used in psychological and psychiatric treatment in 2013.
Well, I can answer that, I think. I think I can definitely answer that. On the pluses and minuses, first of all, on the negative side of this, if you watch TV, you can just take a pill and you can solve any kind of problem. If you're depressed, if you're agitated, if there's too much tension, anxiety, take a pill and everything's going to go away. But yet, in real life, we have problems that need to be addressed. I mean, if you break up with your wife or you have to break up with your boyfriend and you're really depressed, is a pill going to solve that? I don't think so. Or if there's a sudden death in the family and you're really distraught, is a pill going to make up for that person who's missing? I don't think so. Or if you're in a certain conflict in life, in your job or whatever, a pill is not going to solve the problem. So this notion in this country that medication is going to solve problems and be a panacea and solve psychological issues and conflicts is ridiculous. On the other hand, certainly people are in a crisis, and if medication can help them get through a short period of time where they can pull themselves together and then deal with all of their issues, that certainly makes some sense. So I think that we really need to have a different view of medication and these mind-altering drugs, because some of the side effects and some of the problems that they cause, or the reliance on them, is a bigger problem. Relying on these medications to solve your problem is probably really going down the wrong road.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. No doubt am I anti-medication. I know that there's a time and a place for it. That it can be very effective. It does seem to me like a lot of people become reliant on it. It seems to me like there's parents out there that use it as a crutch sometimes, as opposed to just being an active parent. And then you're creating a situation where, you know, if the medication is used as the crutch for the parent, when the medication and the parent are taken away, the child has zero self-coping skills. I mean, you know, I'm not a person that thinks there's any one cause for any problem in the world. I think there's a multitude of them, but that's something that's stuck in my mind. It's one of those things that if I had a magic wand, I would find a better solution to.
Yeah, and you know, and to your comment, isn't it amazing today you see this epidemic of people that are addicted to Vicodin, Percocet, Oxycontin, you know, heroin. I mean, all of these opiates. I mean, there are people across the country now that are addicted and have serious problems with this, and they need help. And a lot of times, if they can get the help and they can get to the right clinic and to the right person, there will be a significant difference.
Well, so to summarize, to bring it all back together, the title of our show today is What Turns Men Into Killers. Men obviously being human beings, mankind, not just males. But what's your summary thoughts? What's the underlying theme across the majority of these incidents that we've dealt with in our world in the last several years? I want your answer to the question, what turns men into killers in these specific instances?
Again, I think what turns them into killers is a long-standing personality disturbance, things that happen over time. It's not something that is just triggered very quickly because they've had a few bad days or months. But I think that to sum up, I would say that what we need to do in this country is to change our view of mental health and have parents and kids more exposed at the middle school and the high school ages to what psychologists can do today in terms of treatment. Special counseling, what we call cognitive behavioral, it does make a difference. And if we could prioritize mental health and recognize problems earlier and deal with them, then a lot of these issues would be at least somewhat minimized.
Okay, so I have this trick that I play on all my guests, and I don't tell them about it. So if you haven't watched the show before, it's going to be a surprise. But it's the magic wand question. In reference to the issue that we've been talking about today, your answer has to be realistic. Like, you can't use your magic wand to bring aliens in from Venus to solve these problems. But if you had a magic wand that could do one thing right now, today, what would you do? And it doesn't have to be the end-all, cure-all. It's just the one thing. And you can't say make mental health more of a priority. I want a definitive, what would I actually do? So the magic wand question is on you, Dr. Rossi. What would you do if you had a magic wand that you could use one time to help address this issue across our country, across the entire world?
Well, what I would do, I hope this is specific enough, but I would put in a specific program, as I said before, not just a conversation, but a specific program that I could outline. I could do it. I could write it up, and I would put this program in place where kids and parents had to participate in the middle school and at the high school level in this program so that they could get a real, honest understanding of what we can do vis-a-vis mental health. That's what I would do. That would be a very specific program. It would be somewhat intensive. It wouldn't be just a conversation a couple times a year. A very specific, well-drawn-out, formatted program, middle school, high school. Make it happen.
All right. So now I was going to sum things up, but now you've tweaked my interest again. I've got one more question because I'm intrigued by the fact that your goal there is to get them to have a better understanding, of the psychological treatment that's available. Is that correct? Did I summarize that up correctly?
Correct.
And I like that because I think that's a great answer actually, because I think a lot of, parents for sure, anytime you have a lack of knowledge with any type of treatment of your child or any type of outside third-party involvement in the raising of your child, when you don't have an understanding for it, it oftentimes leads to a severe misunderstanding and even a fear of it. So I really like that approach of just getting more people educated about what's out there, the possibilities, and not necessarily forcing treatment. Or I like the fact that understanding was your goal. I think that is, in fact, the biggest obstacle.
And, you know, the byproduct of that would be that even if you had a kid that was certainly not going to become a terrorist or a killer or a problem person with the law, but suppose you had a kid that was very good athletically but didn't have the competitiveness, didn't know how to really compete, you might find that maybe your kid could get some help from a psychologist to change the way they're thinking, maybe make them more competitive, make them think a little bit differently and how they compete, whether it's in academics or on the field. All those types of things would be a byproduct of this type of approach.
Yeah, I like that. I like the I like the concept of educating because I do think it's the biggest obstacle. I think that there's, you know, I think that people don't understand what can be done. People don't understand the steps of how it can be done. And there's also, you know, there's an embarrassment factor or a tentativeness on because of pride. You know, you think you can handle your kids' issues on your own or you don't want to admit to the world that there is issues, underlying issues there. So I like that because that was a good magic wand answer. If you were sitting there wondering, you did well on the magic wand question.
That's a great question. You know, there is a thing in psychology called the magic cure. I don't know if you're aware of that, but some really good psychologists will ask a patient, let's suppose tomorrow you could wake up and all of these problems that you've identified would be gone. What would you do? And it's very interesting to see the response sometimes.
So you're kind of saying that my magic wand question is a technique that educated psychologists have copied off of me.
Yeah, I think they've all copied off of
me. Right, exactly. There's professors out there everywhere teaching the Cody Talks magic wand concept.
That's it. They got it.
Hey, Dr. Rossi, I appreciate you coming on today. It's been a great conversation. I was so interested in it that I hopefully didn't get us too distracted off the end goal or the main topic that we have. If folks out there, if you want to know more about Dr. Rossi, there's a link to his website, rossipsychologicalgroup.com, underneath the video on Cody Talks.
Actually, Cody, it's brossi.us.
Okay. I had another one in the notes. brossi.us. brossi.us.
That's it.
Oh, there it is right there. Did I just make up the other one?
The other one is my private practice.
Oh, okay. Yes, brossi.us has got a lot of great information on it. And we'll change that link on the website. Dr. Rossi, thanks so much for coming on. It's been an incredibly interesting conversation. Maybe from a selfish standpoint, I'm very just intrigued by the psychological aspects behind the, you know, all the way from the crazy to the horrifying things that people do. I would love to, I think like every person that's a diehard psychologist, I would love to find a way to get inside the brains of people and find out what they do. So this has been, from a selfish standpoint, a great conversation today. Thank you for coming on.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. You take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.